Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Welcome to the Football Ramble. Arsenal beat the champions. Kane hits 200. It's Thursday the 16th of July. I'm Jules Breach.
I'm Jim Campbell.
And I'm Andy Brassel.
Yes, we are gathered here today on Thursday the 16th of July, the day after Arsenal beat the champions Liverpool by 2-1. And Jim, the Arsenal fan, is still in disbelief.
I am in disbelief. It's a happy disbelief, but it's, what a weird game.
It was so weird. What a strange game.
I feel nice and relaxed now because when you started that, we have gathered here today. I thought, me and Jim aren't getting married to celebrate, are we? That would be a touch too far.
It was odd though, wasn't it, Jim, in terms of the match? I mean, Arsenal were gifted the two goals in the first half. Liverpool's goal was pretty decent before that.
Yeah.
And the second half was so strange in the sense that Liverpool had so much possession. I think Arsenal's possession stats by the end of the match was about 29% in that second half. But I think there was one moment in the second half where Liverpool had 95% of possession for about 15 minutes.
It's absolutely incredible. They had a lot of shots as well. I think it was 17 shots in the second half. But I think it seems to be that the key to beating Liverpool is let them batter you when they're not trying that hard, which is a rare set of circumstances that you're going to find yourself in, and then pounce on mistakes that they might make once every 2 years. Like, two mistakes like that in a game is unheard of from this Liverpool team. And Lacazette was excellent in pouncing on both of them in the various ways that he did. So it wasn't, they weren't completely clear cut. They weren't quite as bad as let's say, a classic Arsenal mistake. So some credit is deserved there. But it was odd, wasn't
it? You're not having anyone taking your mistakes crown.
Oh, no, no. That's our thing. We've got really clownish mistakes.
Liverpool have got the championship. They're not having that.
Clownish mistakes and the worst fans in the world. You know the ones I mean. And yeah, it's just... It was great. It was brilliant. I can't believe we sort of like that set of circumstances happened, but it was brilliant, and it's actually a much needed kind of 3 points that I did not expect us to get.
It is interesting, isn't it, how beauty is very much in the eye of the beholder. I remember Henry Winter tweeting during the game, oh, we can see Arteta's plan clicking into place and the 3-4-3 and the incessant pressing that is pushing Liverpool into these mistakes. I mean, that's fine. It's his opinion. I'm not tearing anyone out, but... not everyone see it like that. Yeah,
I'm not so sure, particularly Virgil van Dijk's mistake, he was pushed into that mistake at all. It was just a lapse of concentration, wasn't it?
He thought he was pushed into it, didn't he?
Yeah,
he was complaining about the... Well, it was just a touch on the shoulder, really, wasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I think he was probably just in shock. Like, he was saying to the ref, I don't do that, do
that's
I?
That's not me.
I don't do
what
those
there?
Things. Nah, this, something's wrong. Something must be wrong.
Do you reckon he's maybe past that point where he feels it's acceptable for him to be challenged? I mean, I remember Zlatan talking about when after his couple of first weeks at Paris Saint-Germain, they were saying, what do you think of the French league? Obviously expecting him to say, oh, easy, I'm the best. Yeah. And what he said is, people tackle me over here.
Yeah.
It's outrageous. he was absolutely affronted by it.
Yeah, I like that. But it reminds me also of when Al Pacino said that he got to a point where all he had to do was turn up and be Al Pacino. And actually, like, it was less interesting then because he didn't need to put so much into the roles and like develop the character so much. Maybe Van Dijk's got a bit of the Pacino about him. I don't know. But I'm happy he has.
It was strange though, because as we say, it was the first error that Van Dijk has made that has led to a goal by the opposition in 88 matches.
It's phenomenal.
That is quite something. Mm. Do you think there's an element of, Andy, that players kind of almost don't try and tackle him? Or is that part of it? Or
it's the aura as much as anything else. I mean, it's funny. I think Sergio Ramos is another one of those guys who has the aura.
Have and you
the,
seen the his aura latest definitely Instagram increases. Picture?
Tell me.
I mean, this body is, it's actually frightening.
Yeah.
It's not actually that nice, which I'm surprised to say.
Like a minus percentage body fat.
Yeah, it's weird. There's some muscles that I didn't know the body had in that body.
He's got some new ones.
It just looks like he's had a busy lockdown for the moment, though. And the fact that the beard is going the full way. I mean, he does look kind of Game of Thrones extra at the moment. It's not quite got to the bit where there used to be this... guy who's a famous German goalkeeper, Tim Wieser, who played for Werder Bremen, and he actually became a wrestler. You've talked about it on the Ramble before, I'm pretty sure. And he went from like normal sized guy, you know, albeit with a decent build, into, as you say, muscle over every
knuckles.
Half finger. Yeah,
it's so weird. It doesn't quite look right, but he is a mean machine, isn't he?
He really is. I just feel like the amount of chicken breast you must get through in a day. Like, sure, he's not eating anything else. Like, it's nuts.
Just chicken and broccoli.
God, I'm still reeling from the game. but yeah, I mean, it was fun, wasn't it? It's nice when a game goes weird like that, because there was a lot of weird little touches, like the team's coming out to Triple H's music.
Again?
Yeah. I mean, I know this is not the first time, but it does really feel like the end of the season is just... It's like the last day at school, isn't it?
I
feel like they might just sit down and play Monopoly.
Oh, I absolutely
400.
Love it.
Kernkraft 400 has done pretty well out of lockdown, isn't it? Everyone's been on that.
I love the fact that Arsenal's playlist is the thing that we talk about a lot, because they have had an incredible person who has come in and taken over that role and taken it quite seriously.
Yes.
At halftime, I noticed they played Missy Elliott, Get Your Freak On, absolute banger.
Yeah, James Brown is often played after a big victory, and it's a lot of fun. I think it's James Brown. Also, there is that good old Arsenal song. I don't know if you've heard it, but it is so bad. It is so, so bad. There's a bit of work to be done on the playlist, I think.
There's very much a... like it's all in a very definite playlist before kickoff at Arsenal normally. Mm. And obviously, the guy just presses play and then goes, right, I have to leave the room because I've heard this like 500 times before. So... you'll be able to tell me in what order it goes in. You've got that good old Arsenal song. You've got London Calling.
Yeah, that comes before that. The good old Arsenal song now tends to be the thing that they come out to. This is The Wonder of You.
The Wonder of You.
Creeps in here and there as well. It's a funny old playlist they've got going on there. But I'm enjoying the introduction of Triple H. And I do quite like this more informal Premier League that we seem to be seeing, where it's like, it sounds like something we would have joked about in the past. You know, what wrestlers' theme music would you have teams come out to? And now stuff like this is actually happening.
Yeah.
It's bizarre, isn't it? It is, but I quite like it anyway. I've thoroughly enjoyed hearing all that music. Now, after the game, Arteta's post-match interview I thought was quite interesting. He said in terms of fight and hunger, they matched Liverpool, and that's something that he's obviously been working on with the team. But in terms of players and investment, they obviously have a long way to go. Would you agree with that, Jim, that in terms of fight and hunger, Arsenal are there and they can match those top teams?
I think they sometimes can do that, but that it tends to be in response to when they've got a little bit of slack, and that slack has become unacceptable. So we've seen it so many times over the years when Arsenal sort of commit to a press, or if they sort of dig in and they give a good defensive performance. It's there. It's absolutely there throughout a season, but it's just not consistent enough. The thing with Liverpool, and obviously they're streets ahead, is you get that from them in every game. They lost that game, and you know it was still there. You know, setting a Mane aside, obviously not everybody was playing at their absolute sort of top speed, but Liverpool still, you know, did what they do, and Arsenal don't do it in every game. And Arteta's right, and I think he's figuring out which members of his squad he can rely on to do that, and trying to sort of, you know, mould those that will perhaps be amenable to just, you know, being a bit more coherent in terms of consistency. But the thing that I was most encouraged by was how he spoke about how it's going to be very, very difficult to improve without significant investment.
Yeah.
The board probably don't want to hear that, but they do need to hear it. And I'm really happy that there's a manager there who's happy to say that, and is perhaps happy to kind of publicly go against the party line, perhaps, because Arsenal are always talking about...
Do you think he's starting to realise that more?
I think so. There's
he
a sense of that,
he didn't seem too positive
there,
about it, did he?
No, he didn't, which is really interesting. You've just beaten the champions in weird circumstances, yes, but the narrative that he comes out with is that he needs more money. And you don't really expect Mikel Arteta to be a sort of political manager in terms of his post-match interviews. You know, you'd expect that from Jose Mourinho, Pep Guardiola to a degree. We've seen a lot of managers do it, but Arteta, we're still figuring him out as a manager, and I'm really encouraged by that, actually, because it's just an obvious truth that is one of those things that's so frustrating as an Arsenal fan. You do feel kind of hamstrung and handcuffed by the owners, because, you know, they effectively use the club as an investment vehicle, and realistically, if Arsenal want to get back to that top table, they've got, clearly they have to spend. So that's two very strange positives from this evening.
Isn't that the weird thing about being a head coach, and particularly a new head coach, though? That sort of creation of your own image, and that's normally you're, I think, encouraged by the environment that coaches grow up in general, to be that sort of, I have all the answers. This is definitely me. I want to present the strongest possible version of me, and you can't show any sort of weakness or doubt, or perceived weakness, I guess. Whereas in fact, I think changing your opinion is like actually, or evolving your opinion as time goes by, is the sign of a healthy mind. And that's what we've got with Arteta. I suppose the thing is, because, and I've said this from the beginning with him, because he's such a good communicator, I think he's almost got a little bit more leeway. Because, you know, you have to ask with Arsenal, is the content that different than it was under Emery? Not always. I think, you know, you want to feel that they're going in the right direction, but his rhetoric informs that so much. I think the interesting thing when you talk about what he's trying to do is Lacazette becoming part of it again, because his departure seems like a fait accompli when you go back just a couple of weeks, he's a little bit marginalised. But for me, if you want to play that sort of style, he's the first player you want in the team. Yeah. Because the fact is, even when he's having a crap match, he will give you a full shift. If I think of all the great players that Leon have produced over the years who've left, who, if they made an improbable comeback, I would be delighted with. Him and Umtiti are the two that stand out. If I could have one of those back tomorrow, it would be like it wouldn't be Benzema and it wouldn't be Fekir, actually, even though they're far easier on the eye, just because you know what you're getting out of them every single game, even if they're out of form.
Yeah, it's that battling spirit that I really like about Lacazette. It's the way that even if he does go through a little bit of a goal drought, I mean, he's had that issue that it was only fairly recently that he started scoring away from home again. But he does fight and he takes it to defences, and his hold up play is really good as well. And he's Aubameyang leaving is probably quite likely, but hanging on to Lacazette as well is important, because it's completely feasible that like could lose both. But I have to say, I think one of my highlights of the game as well, I watched it on Sky, was David Jones having to do the little movie plug that is kind of thrown into Sky at the moment.
It's always so awkward, isn't it?
It is, but this one was particularly so because it was Ad Astra. I don't know if you've seen the movie, but it's very weird, quite cerebral, thoughtful movie about Brad Pitt in the near future taking a trip to Neptune to track down his absentee father Tommy Lee Jones, right? And it's a good movie, but it's a bit of a curious one. And like Graham Souness's just disdain for the concept of that was so funny.
His face was just like, what
the hell? I'm not watching that. I'm just going to watch football and think about football. I think they should put Souness on these.
I love the change of gear, though. It's like, and it's a brilliant win for Arsenal. They've beaten the champions Liverpool by 2-1, and still to come on Sky Sports this week, we've got the movie. Yeah. weird gear change.
So there's these two cowboys.
Is your vision for Graham Souness to go, and coming up next, we're going to have a heartwarming romantic comedy starring Jennifer Aniston.
Yeah, exactly that. Exactly that.
That would be good.
Well, I mean, why not? We've got wrestlers' music for teams to come out.
It feels a bit Europa League to me, isn't it?
Don't talk about the Europa League to Jim. Adventure. He doesn't want it next year.
That was a private conversation. No, I don't.
You don't?
I recognise the need for it, but like part of me sinks at being in there. I mean, ideally, I want to win the league and be in the Champions League. You know,
sorry, it's not going to happen, Jim. Yeah. It's not going to happen.
But actually, I genuinely had thought that we probably wouldn't even finish in a Europa League place, because I thought it was realistic that we would lose this game, and then Villa and Watford have got a lot to play for and we might just be out of the running by then. But actually now, I mean, I suppose Arsenal beating Liverpool
is bad for Villa, isn't it?
So that hence it has happened, thinking about
your theory,
So now I think actually there is a chance of getting into it. I had sort of thought, oh, you know what, maybe I won't be busy on Thursday nights. But I recognise, obviously, the club need to be there. If they can't be in the Champions League, they have to be in the Europa League. So, yeah.
And
I have to just be a spoiled fan and lump it.
What for Liverpool, though? Because it means that they can no longer get the record points total over 100. It's a maximum of 99 points only possible for Liverpool now.
Yeah.
Do you think they mind? Do you think they care?
It shouldn't matter. I think Jurgen Klopp minds. And it's one of the things that you've sort of rediscovered about him in recent weeks. And I think we might have mentioned this in a recent show. What a terrible loser he is. And I love that about him.
His face at 2-1. It was my face on the sofa as well. He was sat there just with his mouth wide open, just like, are you for real? What's going on out there, boys?
Sorry, is that a joke? You can't joke.
Yeah. This is an actual football match and you're losing.
The thing is, his current glasses are very much like my wife's old glasses. So when he pulls that face, I actually feel that I'm being told off from within the television, which is quite an uncomfortable prospect.
That is strange.
There was another corridor of applause, Andy Brassel, before the game. They've dropped points, Liverpool, now in 4 of the 7 games since the restart. Should there still be a corridor of applause?
Well, I don't think it really suits them, does it? No. It obviously sets them too much at ease. Look, I don't think it really matters in terms of records or anything like that. If you say to Liverpool at the start of the season, you're going to win the league with some comfort, that they're having that. And that's fine. They have been the best team by a mile, and dropping a load of dead games doesn't really matter. Except when you go back to Klopp.
Why couldn't they lose to Brighton? I mean, for sake.
But doesn't this just keep them on their toes? The fact that Klopp is getting that rage. That's maybe because I think the most difficult thing with Liverpool going forward, you look at that team and they're in a not entirely dissimilar place to the one that, say, Real Madrid were in 2017 after they won the Champions League. You look at that team and you think, how can you improve it? And I think it's not an unreasonable answer to say, it's great, don't improve it.
Yeah.
But that is not good thinking. You know, you need to be thinking at, and again, I've said before, there is going to come a point where Klopp and the club, if they want to renew that team and if they want to turn this from a Liverpool championship into a Liverpool dynasty, there's going to come a point where they're going to have to make some unpopular decisions and ditch some players who are really, really loved and have done a lot for them. Mm. Because that's what you have to do to maintain it. And there's going to come a point where they'll maybe, I don't know, Flick Firmino or Jordan Henderson or someone like that. Something that feels now, if you're a Liverpool fan, loving the moment, absolutely unthinkable. And these moments help you to do that, because these are the moments that Klopp will say, right, we've got to freshen this up.
Yeah. It's like a sort of a forest fire is actually good for the forest in some cases. It is one of those examples, isn't it? But actually, could it be that if this complacency is going to be there, because it looks like there is a little bit of complacency from Liverpool in terms of, I know this is a weird example of a game because they had so many shots and they really did batter Arsenal, but you know the games they've lost recently sort of paint that picture. It's better for them to surely have that now than it is for it to like pop up at the start of next season.
Oh yeah, absolutely, 100%. But I just wonder. I mean, I'm not saying like just one match against Arsenal could change your whole transfer policy. But say if you're in a
imagine
if you're in a position of transfer deciding power at Liverpool, and you see that, is this maybe one of the games that makes you think if we're going back a couple of weeks before he signed for Chelsea, think, oh, maybe we do make the effort and sign Timo Werner.
Yeah,
you know, even though he's not definitely straight in our first team, do we need to put more pressure on these boys? Mm. You know, maybe that does make you have a bit of a think about it.
Yeah, very interesting indeed. Well, also last night, Spurs beat Newcastle 3-1. Harry Kane scored a brace in the game, which means he now has 200 club career goals in 350 appearances between the clubs he's played for: Spurs, Millwall, Leighton Orient and Leicester. Did you remember that he played for Millwall and Leicester?
Vaguely. Yeah, there's that famous picture of Harry Kane and I think Jamie Vardy on the bench together for Leicester.
It's weird, long isn't it? It's weird to think of him anywhere other than Spurs.
It is funny, like for the Champions League Weekly, I went up to do a TV interview with a couple of Leicester players a couple of years ago when they were in the Champions League before they played the quarterfinal with that Atletico Madrid. And I was one of the players I was getting ready to interview was Danny Drinkwater, and he'd obviously been there for a sustained period and been through some stuff with Leicester. And it's funny, I was looking back at where Leicester had been relatively recently, and I was thinking of that Watford Leicester playoff, you know, with the knockout penalty miss and Deeney goal right at the end, and I was at that. It was an incredible game, and It's funny, I remember looking at that to refresh my memory on some of the detail. And you're like, oh my God, Harry Kane came on in that game.
Yeah.
It's so like, weird, isn't it?
But it's incredible.
I mean, among my friends who are Spurs fans, which I do have, believe it or not, it's interesting because Harry Kane was almost a little bit of a joke figure when he started. He was like their Europa League striker, and he looked a little bit gawky when he was younger, and
there was nothing.
Thought he was just like a kind of useless option off the bench, and the transformation is absolutely phenomenal.
There's nothing really in those loan spells that made me think really he's going to play even more than a handful of games for Tottenham.
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
I know it's easy to rewrite history, and like you know, obviously when the documentaries come out, there's going to be people going, "Oh, I always knew, I always knew." Yeah. But you know, well, I didn't always know.
No, I didn't.
And quite a lot of other Spurs people didn't.
No, I think when we talk about football, we throw around numbers quite flippantly, don't we? So Harry Kane has reached 200 club career goals. To put it into perspective, it's quite an incredible achievement that he's done that in just 350 appearances, because that is quicker than Cristiano Ronaldo reaching his 200 goals for club matches. That was 379 games he did it in. Sergio Aguero, who I still think is the best striker in the Premier League, he did it in 396 games. Thierry Henry did it in 439 games, and Wayne Rooney in 449 matches.
It is phenomenal.
It's amazing he's done it in 350 appearances. And this surely, I think, means that it's another one of those milestones in Harry Kane's career that makes me think again, he surely has to be Alan Shearer's record in the Premier League. He's got to get there, hasn't he?
Yeah, well, you imagine he will, and I think he'll get Wayne Rooney's record for England as well. But
yeah,
you've got to ask, has there ever been a solitary runners-up medal with such an amazing record attached to it? No, but yeah, and being a dick aside, I think he will probably...
Harry Kane's a dick!
Jim Campbell's a dick. One of those third-person guys. I think he'll surely be gunning for that, because I think one of the things that's so impressive about Kane is it so much of it is from him, isn't it? He identifies a weakness in his game and then he just scrubs it out, because he scored so many goals for Spurs across so many different competitions. He scored goals for England. And if you look at the absolute huge, huge difference in the styles of play between Pochettino and Mourinho, Kane's not missed a step, has he? Like, he's such a versatile player, and I think that's what's going to give him a really good chance of hitting that record.
I think the interesting thing in the last couple of games particularly, he started to look like Kane again, because, to be honest, I think a lot of the football in the Premier League has been quite flat since it's come back. I mean, I think maybe we're now at the point where we have to recognise, and we should have recognised, that, you know, we always talked about the Bundesliga relying on its atmosphere. The Premier League does. The Premier League really does rely on that atmosphere, I think, to create momentum and to create something on the pitch as well. And I think it has got to do with the way the game is played, this sort of absolutely breakneck pace as well. I think that's quite difficult to replicate after the break. But, I mean, you can't really single out Harry Kane because of that, but Harry Kane has looked off colour for a lot of the time since the restart. But the last couple of games, I mean, the extraordinary thing about Harry Kane, and I think why you can put him in the same sort of bracket at least as Messi and Ronaldo, even if he's not quite there yet, I think firstly the numbers, and you know, not with teams that are as prolifically trophy winning as Real Madrid and Barcelona. What Jim was talking about that absolute, you know, drive to eradicate all those sort of weaknesses in
desperate
his game
for it, isn't
and improve something each year, you know, get to that point where he starts to become a monster in the air, which he never was before. All those little things that he just obviously works on really feverishly, and he's, you know, the point where dedication sort of tips over to obsession, really. I think he's in that
and
sort
all the
of
best
bracket.
Sportsmen have that, don't they? All of the best kind of most successful athletes have got that drive and have got that kind of desire to make themselves better and to continue winning and continue getting better. What did you make of the actual performance itself? Because Jose Mourinho seemed absolutely delighted with it. He was in his post-match, he was saying, This was a brilliant performance from the boys. And he kept saying, they're absolutely shattered. They're absolutely knackered. They, you know, they've had to play this game two days, after their previous match, and they're knackered. But they were excellent. They were fantastic. Were they that brilliant?
I think when Jose talks about brilliant, he means they executed my game plan, which is to, you know, just play the Jose way,
win.
Which isn't always exactly just win and not necessarily have the most sparkling performance. So I think he's talking in the context of them being tired from the North London derby, and they had a game. It was only 2 or 3 days before that, wasn't it? So they've played a lot. So I think that would be part of that. It wasn't exactly the most swashbuckling stylistic display, was it?
Well, the thing is, there's a lot of things we can nail Mourinho for, and we do. But in this context, I don't think he was trying to argue, as some people have suggested, that, you know, we played dazzling football. We just hung in there. I think that's what he was saying, like Jim says. I think that's fair enough. And going back to the point I was making about Harry Kane, I think that's part of that, because basically he's a player who his idea of dealing with injury or lack of form is just play through it.
Yeah.
And that is what he's really got in common, actually, with Messi and Ronaldo. And you could see it coming back, I think, in the North London derby, even though he didn't score in that.
He
got better and better as the game went on. And that just absolutely won't give in. Like, loads of people have said he's not a Mourinho type of player. I think he's very much a Mourinho type.
Yeah, because a Mourinho type of player will just do what they're told, right? And Kane seems to be someone who's open to that. It's like, okay, if this is how we have to play, this is the system, then I'm going to fit my game around it because I want to score goals.
Well, it's attrition, isn't it? His game. Yeah. It's a huge part of his game, isn't it?
Yeah. He's an absolute machine, as are we here on The Ramble. We continue every single day, but we do need a break, just as Harry Kane does sometimes in his career. So we're going to take a quick break now. And then after that, we're going to talk about some interesting stuff that's coming up in the football schedule.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
Jackmate's Happy Hour is back for a brand new season. It's the podcast where we talk to some of the most exciting people in the world, from Ricky Gervais.
In some ways, fame makes you a better person. You know, it's like, I don't believe in God. I don't believe in God's watching me, but I know someone with
everyone else's.
To undercover police officers.
Can you see the fading scar there, gentlemen?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
That's where I was stabbed in the neck by a drug dealer once.
Or we just talk about whatever's making us laugh right now.
When you think back to school kid banter, like, it's well funny because of how immature it is. We had this teacher called Mr. McGibbon, and he had this big cushion that he was teaching us how to rugby tackle on. He just ran up to it, rugby tackled it, but landed on top of it, and one of the kids shouted, "It's not your wife, sir."
That is funny.
Listen to Jackmate's Happy Hour on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Jackmate's Happy Hour is a Stakhanov production.
You're listening to The Football Ramble. I'm here with Jim and Andy today. Before we talk about some stuff that's coming up in the football schedule, FIFA have released the schedule finally for the World Cup in Qatar. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about the transfer window coming back as well. But eagle-eyed, eagle-eyed? Is that a thing?
Yeah.
No. Eagle-eyed listeners? No.
Yeah.
No, it doesn't work. It
depends on the end of the sentence. We don't know why.
Yeah, okay. Let me say this again then. Keen listeners of The Ramble who were listening on yesterday's Ramble will have heard Luke, Kate and Vish talking about Ramble merchandise. And we've had an email about this from Gavin McKee, who says, "Dear Football Ramble, Luke ended Wednesday's episode with an appeal for Football Ramble merchandise. And I decided this was as good an opportunity as ever, for some name puns, some intense thought later, and these are my merchandising suggestions. Are you ready for this, boys?
Ready.
This is good. So we've got a Pete Donald sun lounger.
Weird thing to picture. Just yeah. his head over and over again, I can imagine. Yeah.
Kate Mason jars.
Nice.
They are right. good, and that's a good one. Jim camping bell test.
It's a stretch, that, isn't it?
They, to be fair, Gavin's been kind to your name because there could have been lots of bell yeah. puns.
Camp Bell. I mean, no one seemed to notice that at school. That's an absolute playground given, but yeah.
You got away with that one. Mm. We've got Vitouche hand sanitizer.
Nice.
Topical.
Very topical. Yeah.
Like it. This one for me, Jules Brie cheese making kit, which I want one of, please, Gavin. If you would like to, you know, get this made and send me one, then I'll gladly accept. And this one, Andy Brass selfie stick.
I mean, it's a product that I very much don't endorse.
Yeah.
Apart from that, that's because I've got quite a long arm.
You do have long arms.
You see, the problem is, though...
No need for a selfie stick with you about.
Well, that's the thing. When I've got a group of friends, the thing is, you know when you take a selfie... It adds a couple of chins. Mm. I always have to take one for the team because I've got the longest arm.
That's annoying.
So I have to do the selfie.
See, I'm the smallest person in every group of social circumstance I'm in. And I always am at the back because I can never be the one taking the picture because my arms are tiny. I mean, I'm basically like a 15-year-old girl. I haven't grown since then.
So you buy an Andy Brass selfie stick.
I would happily take an Andy Brass selfie stick. I'd take it. Do you know what? I'd give most of these things a go.
Yeah, it's a weird holiday. but you could fit them all together, I think.
Yeah. Gavin says, I have ran out, admittedly, of weak puns at this point and just ended with Luke's game, the board game and a Heart/Fulham half and half scarf for Marcus as well. You're welcome. And please email back when royalties are sorted. Gavin, you've got to make the product. You've got to make them for us and then we might consider it.
I still think I don't want to steal directly from Bundesliga clubs, although they do already have all the ideas. So it's inevitable to a certain extent that we are going to steal some of their club shop ideas. But I know Kate was quite incredulous yesterday about the Borussia Dortmund toaster that burns the club crest on the bread. The other thing I didn't mention was that when it pops up, it plays a club anthem. I think you could definitely You could definitely go a ramble toaster.
Yes. Mm.
Can you imagine that, playing the theme tune when your toast is ready?
That would be great. Just a little stab.
What number do you have your toaster on?
Depends what I'm toasting.
Oh, really?
Yeah, if it's just toast, I'll go about a third of the way up, maybe. If it's a crumpet, all the way up. And then
like it a bit crispy.
Do it again with a tiny bit.
I'm
wow.
on the dial. You got to toast a crumpet properly.
So our boss man, John, has it on a number 3. Now, I feel like that is far too low. That's like warm bread for me. I like a bit of brown on my bread.
Toasters have no consistency, though.
This is it.
I mean, that's toasters are essentially the VAR of the kitchen.
Yeah, because I have mine around 3 and it's not warm bread. There's
really?
Not enough consistency in toasters.
See,
we're realising
this. I'm a good 4.5 on mine. But mine does go up to a 7, which is an
seven?
Unusual
wow.
number. I thought that was weird.
Maybe
that's the thing.
That reminds me of Sven discussing the Aston Villa job.
Does it burn the Brighton crest into the toast?
It does not.
Oh, yeah.
Although, do you know what I did get last week?
Go on.
I got a Brighton and Hove Albion face mask.
Nice.
Really?
How good's that?
That is cool.
I know. I can't wait to wear it. I haven't donned it yet, but my plan is to wear it on my next outing when I actually eventually leave the house.
Nice.
There you go. Right.
Sorry, I do have an Arsenal branded bottle opener that plays the commentary from Anfield 89 when you open a beer.
Oh wow!
It's great. It was
really.
It's part of the membership thing from probably about 10 years ago. So that's pretty great.
That is impressive. Andy, do you remember you went to Dortmund and you brought me back a Christmas decoration?
I did.
Yeah.
A little snowman.
You did?
To go on the tree.
A little Dortmund snowman.
Aww.
Cute, isn't
That's
he?
Nice.
So cute. All right, let's talk about the transfer window because it's back. The dates have been confirmed for the summer transfer window from the 27th of July. We're only a week or so away from that now, the day after the Premier League season finishes, and it will end on the 5th of October. However, for the first time, we've got this weird domestic-only window from the 5th to the 12th of October where Premier League clubs can only trade with Football League clubs and not with each other.
It's really ominous, this, isn't it? Because it shows that clearly there's going to have to be a bit of a pinch somewhere. So clubs are going to have to kind of think a bit differently. And EFL clubs are just going to have to suck that up and have their players kind of possibly sort of hoovered out of them. It feels a bit like a sort of Premier League outlet store, doesn't
it?
It's
like, yeah,
don't you think?
Bargains.
Don't you think the opposite way is more likely? That EFL clubs will end up loaning players.
You think?
From the bloated Premier League squad.
Perhaps.
It's interesting because I'd taken it as that way. I suppose the thing is, because we've seen a domestic-only window in France as well to preface the current transfer window. And it is just the fact that everyone's going to be making it up as they go along at the moment. Mm. So there's got to be a way of broadly standardising it across the major European leagues, but at the same time, there's a bit of wiggle room, like if the accounts look bad.
Yeah.
You know, I guess that's the way, isn't it?
I suppose so. It strikes me as odd that this needs to be so specific, though.
Yeah.
Because it's, you know, these clubs can trade between each other at other times. Why
up until the 5th
window?
Of October. Yeah, why is there a separate domestic-only one?
Yeah. What was the reasoning for that in France, Andy? Do you know?
Yeah, so they could generate more money.
Oh, it was genuinely quite cynical.
Before the wider transfer window was happening. So they could get something moving and they could get a bit of money flowing in the coffers.
Mm. Who do you think is going to be the busiest in the window, Andy, from Premier League teams?
I think Manchester City are going to be a lot bigger than busier than they would have been. Mm. And I think that's something that we've seen over the last couple of days. But it is interesting. When you look at their current war chest or their projected war chest, I mean, the numbers that have been thrown around are like 150 million euros. The world has changed, doesn't it? Yeah. Because how many game-changing players do you think Manchester City could get for 150 million euros? Two, maybe three?
Mm. Yeah.
I mean, you know, unless prices have changed that much, it's not going to be a great deal. But it's funny, actually, that Manchester City against Bournemouth last night did make me think a little bit of, you know, I've heard people say, well, they don't really need a rebuild. They do need a rebuild.
Bournemouth nearly got a point.
Certainly, in terms of the squad, they need a rebuild.
Yeah, nine games, is it, they've lost?
If you're like a couple of changes away from having Stones and Otamendi at centre-back, you need some changes.
It's a funny one, isn't it? Because I think they will sell players as well. They've already, you know, Pep Guardiola's already been talking about selling John Stones, hasn't he? And but the thing is, it's how much are they going to get in the market? Will they be better off waiting for some of these players, even with their contracts running down a little bit,
to reinflate in value,
a bit stabilised? I'm interested in Chelsea because everyone knows they've got money. So they're in a weird position where selling clubs will probably go, even in this scenario, we want more money. And will that just screw the market again? Mm. Will it just lead to a lot of clubs spending beyond their means? I guess we'll see. It's interesting.
And they've done good business already, Chelsea. And for next season, look like one of the teams to watch, you'd think. What about the goalkeeper situation at Chelsea, though? Because that seems to be, whenever I talk to Chelsea fans, that seems to be the part where they're like, they're just not happy with Kepa at the moment. I don't think he's completely to blame for their defensive issues this season, but he's certainly part of it, isn't he?
No, and he doesn't inspire an enormous amount of confidence, and always that price tag, which is just really problematic in terms of perception. It always sort of dogs him. The fact is, if Chelsea had bought him 6 months earlier, they could have got him for a quarter of the price. Mm. And that is the fact of the matter. I don't think anyone has ever said, or anyone reasonable has ever said, that the price he cost was reflective of how much he's worth. You go back like 6 months before Chelsea bought him, and Real Madrid wouldn't pay the 20 million euros because they're like, oh, he's out of contract soon. And then, of course, he signs the extended contract, which gives rise to this release clause. But because they paid so much for him, they can't just give him away, which is a huge problem in terms of the way they're going to go forward. I mean, in terms of like the fact that they clearly need a defender, at least one defender. They're still interested in Kai Havertz, who is not going to be cheap. I don't really see how they're going to make this goalkeeper thing happen. I mean, of course, there's been talk about Jan Oblak going there. And Oblak, I think there's a strong argument that he's the best goalkeeper in the world.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, what we don't know about him is how good he is with his feet. We know he's competent with his feet, but he's not an Alisson and he's not an Edison. Or if he is, he's been hiding it very well. The fact is, Atletico defends so much deeper than a lot of other teams, including Chelsea. Part of the reason they bought Kepa in the first place is because He can come out and do that keeper sweeper business. But we don't know if Oblak can do that because a lot of the time he doesn't have to leave his 6 yard box.
Does Oblak know if he can do that?
No.
He's not, probably, won't really have had a reason to,
probably
to
not.
Play that way.
Exactly. So it's weird to say that you could buy the best goalkeeper in the world and it could be a bit of a punt for you.
Yeah. It's strange. I mean, Kepa is 25. There's a good argument that actually it's not outrageous that he'll improve soon. Obviously, Chelsea bought him as a long-term investment. So,
isn't that the thing with goalkeepers, that confidence is so much a part of it?
Yeah.
That whereas you could square that for an outfield player, the influence that that has on the team is so much. It's so much more difficult to sell, isn't it?
Completely. But look at Nick Pope, for example. Nick Pope is so responsible for Burnley being so difficult to break down.
Oh, for sure.
You can see that in the way teams approach them and how you know that if you play Burnley, it's going to be an absolute nightmare of a game. Mm. And a lot of that comes from how Nick Pope's confidence translates into the rest of the side. But, you know, the opposite can also be true. And I think there's a danger of that becoming the case with Kepa. But, you know, I think would Chelsea perhaps be better off slightly risking that Kepa will get over this and improve and maybe getting some more reliable defenders to help him out?
Yeah, maybe some proper competition for him. I mean, I'm not knocking Willy Caballero, but, you know, I don't think he's anyone's idea of an A-plus elite goalkeeper. And also, he's not that young, is he?
Yeah.
So if maybe you could get someone as competition for Kepa, maybe that's your solution. I mean, funnily enough, look at Real Madrid. They've stuck with Thibaut Courtois because they kind of had to in terms of the investment they made in him. He's been brilliant this season. He's a key part of them probably winning the league.
Yeah, which they can do tonight. Is that
right? They can do tonight. If they beat Villarreal, they're the champions, and that's that. They're the Bernabeu. It's free on British television as well, which is very exciting.
Your favourite thing.
Yeah, I love a bit of free. So that's quite exciting.
I don't know if I can fit in the Real Madrid game tonight. There's so many football matches.
A lot.
Come on, it's another game to fit in the schedule. Speaking of schedules, FIFA have also released a schedule for the 2022 World Cup in Qatar, and it's absolutely insane. The matches are going to start on the 21st of November and they're going to end on the 18th of December. It's the first time, obviously, we've had a Winter World Cup. Slightly getting my head around it now, I think. And there's a few positives to kind of look at with this. I've been told that the stadiums are all pretty close together. So the fans that are lucky enough to head out there for the World Cup can on some occasions go to more than one game in a day because they can go to one match at one stadium and it's just, you know, a stone's throw away to the next one. Amazing.
Of course, there is the fact that it'll be so hot that it'll take twice as long as it normally would to walk that distance.
True. And you'll be a sweaty mess by the time you get to the second one.
That's a given for the whole thing, isn't it, if you're out there? It's going to be so interesting, isn't it, spectating a Winter World Cup? Because a lot of people are obviously a bit, you know, sad to see that change because there is something really beautiful about a summer tournament. It's just the atmosphere in the country is great. But obviously, we've got to look at other parts of the world that don't necessarily have it that way. But it's, I think it's going to be kind of cool, right?
Yeah.
Christmas and the World Cup at the same time. I've got my head around it now.
I think like up to maybe about 6 months ago, I was still very sceptical about it and was like, I don't really like the idea of a Winter World Cup. But I think because of this kind of rescheduling, because of COVID-19 of the domestic season and the way things have changed, it almost now feels like actually, yeah, I can see this now working. And for the first time ever, we're going to have Christmas off, guys. For people who work in football, that kind of period between sort of middle of December to the first week of January, when you get to the FA Cup weekend in the first weekend of January, it's relentless. It's basically what we're going through now, but over Christmas when you've also got a million Christmas parties and socials, and it is hardcore on the body. It is painful. Yeah. So for the first time ever, we're all going to have a Christmas off. I don't actually have to see my family.
None of us will have to sort of pick up five needless podcast bookings to get a break.
It's going to be strange though, isn't it?
Yeah, it will be unusual. I mean, you know, I guess it would have been interesting to find out if there were any sort of particularly keen players. You know, you can imagine like one or two in the England squad going, yeah, I can't celebrate our World Cup win because I've got to make it back for our League Cup fifth round game, which is in a couple of days' time.
Yeah, I just got another Christmas party. Sorry, guys. You have to get out of the group without me. Hurry.
But
come on.
The way it's condensed into this period of time, I mean, I think there are three rest days in the whole tournament. Oof, you wow. think you think there's a lot of football now. Essentially, we are now practicing for the 2022 yeah. World Cup. Except, I think the other thing, and obviously there are a lot of problems with this World Cup, both in terms of the awarding, the construction yeah. of the stadiums. We all know about that. In terms of the actual football, I think there's an argument that this could be the best World Cup in a generation because, of course, because it's not at the end of the season, all the players won't be flaked, yeah. which is going to make an enormous difference.
We're going to win it, aren't we?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh,
we've basically
my God,
won
we're
going to
win the World Cup.
Yeah,
I can't
it's going to be amazing. It's going to be so good. We're going to win the Christmas World Cup.
Oh, my God. I am like on the Marcus end of the scale when it comes to international football. Yeah. So I am well excited.
Do you think, with it being at that time of year, Noddy Holder should be charged with doing the World Cup song?
Yeah, I absolutely
bring him out of retirement.
Oh my God, that would genuinely be amazing. That'd be so many conflicting happy emotions at once. What a mix up. I am trying to remind myself it's not a Christmas World Cup, it's a winter World Cup.
Can we call it a Christmas World
yeah,
Cup?
Yeah, maybe.
It sounds better.
Do like
it?
A sort of could you make the groups an advent calendar in some way?
Well, there's chocolate and melt, I think.
Yeah, that's very true. That is very true. Well, look, there is lots of football to look forward to far before the 2022 World Cup in Qatar. Tonight, four more matches in the Premier League. Aston Villa have a must-win match at Goodison Park against Everton. It's Leicester against Sheffield United. Leicester trying to hold on to a top four spot. Crystal Palace against Manchester United. And of course, the big one, the South Coast Derby. It's Southampton against Brighton. It's not the South. But people that call it the South Coast Derby.
It's a South Coast
yeah,
Derby.
They need
so what's the real derby? And they literally can.
It's not that hard.
They can actually.
So what's the real derby? Were we talking Worthing?
No.
You having that?
The real South Coast Derby?
So what's your real derby?
Our derby.
What's your real derby?
Palace, isn't it?
Well, yeah, but what's your real geographical derby?
Palace.
No, Palace versus Brighton is not local, so it's not a derby. It's a Classico.
It's closer than any other team on the South
Coast.
It's
the Southern Rail Derby.
Yeah, it is. God, that Southern Rail.
Oh,
I hate it.
God.
I'm glad I don't have to get it anymore now I live in London. So yeah, Southampton-Brighton. It's a big game for the Seagulls, of course, who is now looking a little bit closer at the bottom of the table. So I'm going to watch that one and very nervously indeed. Right, that's all from us today. On tomorrow's show, Marcus, Luke and Pete will be here. They'll be talking about all of tonight's Premier League matches, Real Madrid probably winning La Liga and Leeds getting closer to being promoted to the Premier League for the first time in 16 years. See you tomorrow, Ramblers.
This was a Stakhanov production.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, mate.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more. And join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.